Welcome to the Ada Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast, where we debrief the sermon, focusing on extra points of connection and what there just wasn't time for in the message. We hope this podcast will encourage you to study God's Word and grow your relationship with Him. You'll appreciate the conversation most if you've already heard the weekend sermon, and you can find that link in the show notes. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Beyond the Weekend podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Weekend podcast for our epic sermon series. We're already on week five. Can you believe it? Well, I'm your solo host this week, Stephen Lewis, Director of Spiritual Formation here. And joining me is Pastor Brad Holmes.
Hey.
This week is going to be a little different. Amelia is out of town, and we had a backup co-host, Rachel Norton, our Women's Ministry Director, but she is not feeling well. And so it's Brad and I are going to have a conversation today about Moses and the life of Moses and the fact that basically, Moses' life takes up the whole book of Exodus, and we were only able to cover like two episodes of his life.
Yeah, just dudes today. This is, I mean, it's going to be less funny. It's going to be less insightful. I think this is still going to be good podcast, and you should still listen to it. But yeah,
it's not the
no
way we
female
planned
voices
it.
Today.
Yeah, it's not the way we planned it, but here we are. Yeah. I do have some notes from Rachel in our document, so I will try to summon up my best Rachel Norton, which means there'll be some alliteration dropped in throughout and things like that as well.
Awesome.
But yeah, let's jump into the conversation. And one of the things we love to do on this podcast is talk about a little bit of behind the scenes or what didn't make it into the sermon. So,
So, I mean, Moses' story is so huge. Yeah. It's so vast. There's so much to it. In the sermon this week, I breeze through the plagues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I briefly touched on two of them. And then we didn't even touch on the whole 40 years in the desert.
Right.
I said, and then we fast forward 40 years and we get to this point. So yeah, there's so much there that we didn't get to talk to you. And we took 2 weeks to talk about Moses.
Yeah. He's the only person we're talking about twice.
Right.
Too, right. In this whole series.
Yep. Yep.
So, this sermon though was originally slated for Pastor Aaron, and with the passing of his dad, you jumped in and grabbed two sermons.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to talk us through a little bit? What's that like? And
yeah. Yeah. We had on the docket these two sermons that were going to be about Moses, and we kind of Aaron had a handful of notes already put together. Mm-hmm. I mean, he preps months in advance to kind of get a little bit of an outline and some notes together, and so he shared with me what he had in mind and kind of the direction that he was going, and I wanted to honor that. So he had even some like key thoughts and key points that he wanted to really hit home. And so I hope I did my best to kind of honor the direction that he was going. And then we did just kind of a unique thing that we haven't done before. And we pulled together a group of people and kind of went through, here's a whole stack of books and commentaries, and let's dig in a little bit and then pull together an outline. But rather than either just Aaron doing it or Jeff doing it or me doing it, have a group of people on the front end, which is usually kind of a solo project. Mm-hmm. And then I bring, or Aaron brings the content to a group of people on Tuesday for the BTW. But this we were able to do kind of a week ahead of time. And then I was able to take that content and bring it to the BTW. And I thought it was super helpful, and it was fun. And I really enjoyed having other people's kind of heads together, pulling together that content a little earlier.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. That was like 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And it was, you were there, Amelia was there.
Uh-huh.
I think Joe Hayes, our weekend experience director, and then Luke
Koskinen,
street Luke ministry.
Yep.
And then I had the privilege of being in that room too. That was,
yeah,
that was an interesting experience. You know, we'd never done it before.
Yeah. Whiteboarded just a whole bunch of ideas and thoughts and direction that we could go. Even some ideas about illustrations and hey, maybe something like, what if we were to talk about like weird laws that people that are around in the United States? And that was kind of birthed out of that conversation.
Yeah, I remember, and my 16-year-old daughter would be really proud of me
because
I was writing on the whiteboard and I actually color-coded things.
Yes,
which
nice.
For me is like, you know, I think a real influence of my daughter on my life.
Yes, so. Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of weird laws, I'm curious, when you were growing up or wherever, you know, life took you, where are some of the weird rules you bumped into
in life? That's a good question. So I went to Moody Bible Institute, and a little bit of my story, I started out at Oakland University, which is a secular university over by Detroit, Rochester Hills. And I went there because I wanted to swim, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do major wise, you know, life wise. And it was there that I connected with a church plant and I got really invested and excited about ministry. I never thought like, oh, you can go to school and do this like as a job. No one had ever told me that. I never thought of that before. And so from there transferred to Moody Bible Institute. So going from Oakland, no rules, nothing to Moody, where there were all kinds of rules. Like I had to dress up to go to class. Like that was a rule. Like
what does dressing up mean?
I think you couldn't wear shorts. Okay. So even if it's warm, you couldn't wear shorts. It's downtown Chicago. So most of the year that didn't matter because it was cold. I think it was a polo collared shirt that you had to wear to class. And going from Oakland to Moody, that was just like, are you kidding me? Like I have to wear a polo shirt to go to class. Dating me here. You ready? Okay. So this was when Netflix had just come out with these CDs that they or DVDs that they would mail to you. And so they had this rule that you weren't allowed to go see movies. And they were trying to adopt this like rule to be, what about like these DVDs? Because people had computers and you could put a DVD into your laptop and watch a movie. And so they made a rule and they said, you can't watch a movie on campus. So if you're off campus, like at home, you can watch a movie. If you're off campus, over the summer, you can go to movies then. But when you're on campus, you're supposed to be focused on school stuff, work, you know, working on your school stuff. So you can't watch movies. And so this is what we did. I don't know if this is good or not. We'd take our laptop. We would take one of those DVDs that we would get in the mail and we would literally sit on the curb across the street.
So you were very legalistic about it.
We didn't want to watch it in our dorm room because that would be breaking a rule. But we would watch it across campus.
I think Jesus, if he were here, might talk to you about how laws are not to be followed just in the outward appearance of the law, but also the heart of the law.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I had a very similar rule growing up. We weren't allowed to watch movies.
You know,
I think there was an association of movie theaters with not following Jesus. You know, in previous generations, and that kind of carried over into what you were experiencing at Moody and I experienced growing up.
Well, I mean, even today, I worked with young adults for a long time. There are movies, TV shows you shouldn't be watching.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other?
I also couldn't play with cards for a while growing up. I think there was an association with cards. Yeah. I don't know if it was gambling or the satanic, but we could play Rook because those were the Christian version of cards.
Didn't have the face cards.
But we couldn't have the face cards. Yeah. And that somehow, when the Euchre movement came into our lives, that kind of went away in middle school, high school. But growing up, we didn't have cards around it. And I think some of it was my parents' attempt to honor my grandparents.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I don't even know that my parents felt that strongly about it, but they were also trying to honor their parents and some of the ways in which they grew up. But it's interesting, and it really does tie into, we just talked about Jesus and the heart, but this idea of relationship before rules. And how, you know, I think about even then, my parents were trying to honor a relationship through that rule. And I think as I get some distance from those rules, I honor the relationship of my parents and what they were trying to do there. But, I loved how you brought that out in the story. Like you have this God who rescues them from Egypt. And even that's the beginning of the Ten Commandments, right? I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me.
Even in Deuteronomy, it's in that reminder, it's the, hey, you're about to go in and this land is going to be beautiful. You're going to love it. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be flowing with milk and honey. It's going to be, you're going to have flocks and herds and all kinds of food to eat. But I want you to remember, who I am, what I'm like. I want you to remember that you've been rescued first. And I was really drawn to that.
Yeah, and this is one of those notes from Rachel, so it is alliterated.
Yeah.
But she said she's heard someone describe the law as a mirror because it reflects the character of God. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one who rescued them and brought them out. It's a mentor because it leads us to faith in Jesus. You know, the law is our guardian or teacher. And it shows us where we need to grow and walks us to Jesus. And then it's a map for the spiritual empowered life. It's not that we're going to perfectly follow it, but progressively through sanctification, Jesus was sent. So the righteous requirement of the law might be fully met in us, the rescued one, who live not according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. And we see that in Romans 8. So mirror, mentor, and map were kind of the language that stuck with Rachel over the years.
Yeah, I like that.
So we talked a little bit about God using that phrase, the one who brought you out of Egypt. And that to me was something I was kind of drawn to. And I found somewhere that that is a phrase repeated like 15 to 20 times in Deuteronomy when God's trying to remind these people after 40 years. But then it pops up. You'll see it in like the historical books like Kings. You'll see it when like the bad kings,
yeah.
Be like, and they didn't follow the laws of the Lord who brought them out of Egypt. And then you see it pop up in the prophets, where like Jeremiah, Ezekiel, I think it's in Micah, Hosea, and Haggai, where it's like, hey, the God who brought you out of Egypt, and so it's almost like it becomes part of God's name in somewhere, like one of his main identifiers.
Or an indicator, like you forgot that your God brought you out of Egypt. Like you forgot the rescue. And now look at what's happening. Like oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. And so I was surprised at how many times it pops up throughout, because this is one of the key events of the Bible that we keep getting pointed back to over and over again. And I think one of the keys there is the Exodus isn't only an act of redemption, but it's the first kind of moment of redemption in the Bible.
Yeah.
And so God will rescue his people over and over again. You know, that's kind of the story of the Judges, which is where we're headed to eventually.
Yep.
It's also the story of the exile and return. And then it's the story of Jesus, but it's that formative primary model of redemption in some ways that we see throughout the Old Testament.
And when we talk about rescue and remembering the rescue, I think it's super cool that God even says, hey, by the way, I want you to do this thing every year.
Yeah.
And I want you to celebrate it. And you're going to call it Passover, and you're going to remember. And you're going to spend a whole evening, and you're going to take time to remember that I was the one who rescued you and I brought you out of Egypt. And you're going to do it every single year. And then when we fast forward to think about that, it was at the Passover where the disciples shared the Last Supper, and Jesus introduced this idea of, hey, it's going to be my body that's broken for you and my blood that's shed for you. I am the one who's going to rescue you. I love that. And then, you know, the command that, hey, by the way, when you guys gather together, we celebrate communion. Like you should remember.
Yeah, do this in remembrance of me. That's like, I think the church I grew up with, I think, had one of those communion tables at the front. I don't know. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it had carved into it, do this in remembrance of me. You know, just that idea of remembering.
Yeah, remembering your rescue.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so you see it become part of God's identity in the Old Testament. You see it become kind of a part of a religious tradition, if you will, in the Old Testament. And then if you think of even how we talk about Jesus as Christ, as the Messiah, right, that's part of his identity, is that rescue, and that it's part of the religious tradition. Like we, as Protestants and non-denominational, we don't have a lot of religious traditions, right? We have baptism, which is a sign of being brought to life, and we have communion, which is a remembrance of Jesus' death and resurrection. And I also looked into this week, the idea in Exodus 15, 13 at 16, it talks about Redeemer, because Redeemer is a big idea throughout the Bible. And in fact, you know, I think Tim Keller's church was called Redeemer Presbyterian or something. And Hebrew speakers are going to probably email in and tell us this isn't the right pronunciation, but the verb there is ga'al. It's probably more guttural than that. And I probably can't even do it.
Yeah, use a little more throat.
And then the person doing the redeeming would be the goel. And I thought it was fascinating because it's a term used as a family member. And so it's like God is redeeming essentially his family, right?
Yeah,
he chose these people as his children. And it's also the term used in, think of Ruth and Boaz later with the kinsman redeemer.
Yep.
And I think it was this book here, Chris Wright's Mission of God, that I was looking this stuff up in.
That is a thick book.
It's so good though. but he calls out three things. He says, you usually need a kinsman redeemer for these three things: used to avenge shed blood, to redeem land or slaves, and to provide an heir. Mm. And if you think about the Exodus story, right? God, we talked about last time on the podcast, God sees them, he hears them, and he comes down.
Yeah.
Right? Because the violence perpetuated against them, even the genocide of the first of the boys.
Yeah.
So it's a shedding, avenging shed blood.
Mm-hmm.
It's redeeming them out of slavery. But then even if you think about the land, like God is also going to be redeeming the land.
Yeah.
We're going into Joshua this weekend. And then providing an heir, it's through the people of Israel that Jesus comes to. So you have all three of these elements of kinsman redeemer that you could see.
That's awesome.
Are all wrapped up into what God is doing in the Exodus.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
I think in Ruth and Boaz, I think you only see the two, probably the redeeming land and the providing an heir. But in this kind of picture of redemption, the primary picture of redemption in the Old Testament, you see all three of them.
That's awesome.
And so Wright would say it's about family relationship, it's about powerful intervention, it's about effective restoration. And so if you fast forward that to the New Testament, right, you think about family relationship, we have been adopted into God's family, intervention on our behalf. God has intervened to free us from slavery, and then effective restoration, restored back to the way we're supposed to be eventually through the resurrection. And I just think it's such rich. You know, these are the types of things that make me excited when you study the Bible and you see how, like, in the epic of the Bible, like all these pieces fit together and work toward things.
That's so cool. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Well, hey, talk to me a little bit about the plagues. You know, we kind of skip the plagues.
I mean, I am drawn into the idea that, okay, these are really happened. And I use that imagery of like, okay, so just think about it. If you're a teenager and you were there and you saw all of these things happen, I don't even know what you would be thinking in that moment as you're seeing these amazing things happen. And as we read through the plagues, I think there's a little bit of debate on the first three plagues about whether or not they impacted the Israelites as well as the Egyptians, because I don't think it clearly specifies. Some commentaries I read said, no, because after the third one, it's clear that none of those impacted the Israelites. So some of them would infer that and say, well, then the first three didn't either.
Yep.
I think it's amazing that I use the imagery of the flies. Like, you could be sitting there and just looking over. It says that the Israelites, they were the slaves, and I think they were camped out in a place called Goshen, which isn't far from Egypt, but there would be flies all over Egypt, but not a single fly in Goshen. Like, that would be mind-blowing. But then the sun setting and rising over Goshen, but not over Egypt. And it's so descriptive that it says that the Egyptians couldn't even leave their homes. They couldn't do anything because it was too dark there. You would see that and it would just be mind-blowing, I think.
Yeah, that's the, like, what would it have been like to be them question, right? I love how you drew us back to that, because it can be so easy to read it like history or kind of any other story.
Yep.
But when you ask yourself, though, what would it have been like to be them, either to be the Israelites looking at the swarm of flies over, you know, Egypt, or to be the Egyptians trying to look past the flies and seeing no flies.
Wait, how? Yeah, there are no flies over there. Right.
And you even do see, like, toward the end of the story, because God tells Moses, he says, hey, I'm going to send you down there and the people are going to give you all this stuff on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what really is happening and the Egyptians are experiencing all these plagues and they're seeing the Israelites not experience any of them,
yeah,
it makes sense why they're giving them money to go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, hey, here's all the gold I have. Just please leave.
Yeah. Get out of here.
We don't need any more flies. We don't need any more blood. We don't need our kids dying anymore.
Yeah. And so back when God meets Moses at the burning bush, he tells him, hey, you're going to go in. And the Pharaoh's going to say no.
Yeah.
He's going to say no a lot. And so it's no surprise when Pharaoh says no to Moses. Moses must just be standing there saying, yeah, I knew you were going to say no because God already told me that you were going to say no. So here's what's going to happen. And all of these different plagues happen. And I haven't studied it a ton, but I don't know, maybe you have some insight here, but I have heard that there are some really direct correlations. I don't think it's with every single plague, but several of the plagues, yeah, there's this correlation between a God that they worshiped in Egypt and this plague that basically just undermined and destroyed all of the power that that God had.
Yeah, I mean, we're familiar with the sun god
here,
as Lions fans, because Amun-Ra St. Brown, right? His name actually is the Egyptian sun god, and so the wide receiver for the Lions. So the sun god was Amun-Ra, and you can see that with the night really going after it, and then the Nile.
Yeah.
Like was it a god itself? And so you make the Nile, turn the Nile into blood.
Yep. Yep.
And there are other possible ties. I think I mentioned, I believe Walton, John Walton, who I mentioned a little while, maybe last episode or two episodes ago. I think he's done some work on that. I wasn't able to get back into that this week.
Yep.
But there's definitely this idea that, and you see it with the sorcerers, right? Back and forth in the plagues. So like, sometimes Moses will do something. I think he throws a staff on the ground and it turns into a snake.
Yep.
Well, somehow the sorcerers of Pharaohs were able to kind of recreate that or something.
Yeah.
And Moses's snake, I think, like eats the other snakes or something like that.
Yep.
And so you do see there's a supernatural battle going on here.
Yeah.
As well. And that's something that carries over to the New Testament.
Yeah.
Where in some of those epistles we read that we're not fighting just a battle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And as Americans, we typically kind of like, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there is something going on here. And Pastor Aaron talked about that in that series that we did, I think in March of last year, about the fact that, there's more to this world than what we can see.
Yep.
And we are in a battle with that as well.
Yeah. There's one of those plagues that, man, when I read it, I resonate so much with Pharaoh. I think it's a third plague. And in that plague, it's the one where, frogs come out of the Nile and they're everywhere. I mean, it's really descriptive. It says like they couldn't go to bed. They couldn't lay in bed without frogs pull back the covers and they're frogs full in like all over in your bed. And you have to dig out your bed before you can even go to sleep. They couldn't bake bread in their ovens because when they'd open up the oven, it should be full of frogs. And the part that gets me and it rocks me is when Moses goes to Pharaoh, he says, the Pharaoh tells him, we got to get rid of these frogs. Like, I know this is from your God. Like, we got to get rid of it. And Moses agrees and says, you're right. We got to get rid of the frogs. And Moses tells the Pharaoh, okay, you just give me the word. Like, you tell me when you want these frogs to go away, you tell me when to pray and I'll pray and the frogs will be gone. And the response the Pharaoh has is the part that kind of rocks me. And he says, tomorrow. He says tomorrow. If it were me, like you would think he would say right now, pray right now, but he doesn't. He says tomorrow. And I just wonder how many things in my life I'm like putting up with because I don't really want to deal with it. Like I'm just saying, you know what? I'll deal with this tomorrow. This I can weed this out of my life tomorrow, or I can address this bad habit tomorrow. And And I just keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And I just feel like I can relate to that so well. And yet at the same time, it's heartbreaking to hear him say, yeah, we'll do, why don't you pray tomorrow? Yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, and then he also often will follow it up with like, okay, I've seen God. I recognize he's moving.
Yeah.
And the problem's resolved. He's like, you know what? It's better to have these people here.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of can see myself in that too.
Yeah.
It's like, there are seasons where you just, your dependence on God is so like, you're not going to survive it without depending on God.
Right.
But then once you get through that season, it can be very easy to just kind of settle back into self-reliance.
Yep.
And just feeling like, oh, I did this. I made this. It's, you know, I'm in control of my own life.
Yep.
And until God calls you back into another season of reliance.
Which is, I think, why we get the Ten Commandments a second time in Deuteronomy. Mm-hmm. The land is going to be flowing with milk and honey.
Yeah.
I need you to still depend on me. I need you to still look to me. You're going to have flocks and herds, but I need you to still remember that I'm the one who rescued you and brought you into this land.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little about that, because we go from the plagues and the rescue and the sending out, go through the sea, right? We talked. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about that. And then there, Moses is up on the mountain, Exodus 20, gets the Ten Commandments, and they get ready to go into the land.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they try to, but they don't.
They don't.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then they end up spending 40 years wandering around the desert. Mm-hmm. There are a couple things that I've heard about this. And I had one professor say this 40 years was the time for Israel to learn that they can trust God. Mm-hmm. It was a, no, no, no. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Don't, listen, Israel, you can trust me. You can trust me. You can trust me. Like over and over, it was this 40 years of learning to trust God. Another thing that I thought was fascinating. So they're out in the wilderness. I mean, during this desert period, they're deep into the wilderness. And somebody said at one point, like, it's kind of like the ocean where, you know, early on with boats, like you didn't cross the ocean. Like you didn't do that. Like you didn't have a boat big enough to cross the ocean, supplies to cross the ocean, or navigation or awareness of if I go in this direction, I'm going to eventually hit like land again. Like you didn't cross the ocean. Well, in the same way, you didn't cross the wilderness. And so for 40 years, they're stuck in the middle of the ocean, you know, the desert, but, no other armies could chase after them. Mm. No other, people could come and attack them because they're in the middle of the desert and people couldn't get, to,
get
them.
To them.
Yeah. And, but they're being provided for because they have manna in the morning, every day, except for one day a week. And they have water because God's providing water for them. And they're, God is saying over and over again, hey, listen, you're in the middle of this arid, dry land, but I'm providing food for you. I'm providing water for you. I'm taking care of you for 40 years. You need to trust me, trust me, trust me.
And it says, I think, doesn't it say like their sandals don't wear out and
yes.
their clothes don't wear out too? So God is
sustaining them.
Putting them on some kind of like the video game of infinite lives for their clothes and their shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember, I think it was 2021 or 2022. I was in Israel for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we weren't in exactly the same spot of the wilderness, but southern Israel is like desert, rocky.
Yes.
And we took a long hike on a hot day.
Yep.
There. And the thing I remember impressed upon me from God was like, hey, you would have been one of the people grumbling too.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that's a lot of this Israelite story is they're grumbling. They God's providing for them, but it's like they overlook God's provision in this area to focus on the fact that they feel lost and a little bit hopeless in this area.
Yeah.
And I think that's, God was reminding me like, hey, you can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this story and Jeff talks about like not villainizing the villains.
Yeah.
And we can look at that time period and say, oh, the people are villains. Yeah. You know, they're the villains. They're the ones kind of grumbling against God, complaining all the time.
Yeah.
And I felt like, man, that's me.
Yeah.
Like I remember standing there one time at a break and I'm drinking hot water out of my hydration pack, you know, because it's been 100 degrees and looking at the ground and saying, there's not enough room for me to curl up in the fetal position anywhere here to go to sleep.
Without rocks.
Without being
everywhere.
On top of a sharp rock.
Yep.
And just like, okay, I get why they're grumbling. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it's okay. But I think that's, I can be a grumbler.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and half just, an hour in that environment. Right. And I'm already grumbling.
Yeah. Yeah. So they get through the wilderness 40 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about Joshua. And I don't know how much of this Aaron might cover this weekend. What happens to Moses?
Yeah, Moses, he doesn't go into the land. Mm. He doesn't make it. And yeah, I'm not sure how much Aaron is going to cover, but there's a scene where Moses doesn't trust God. And he gets frustrated with the people. And the consequence of that is God telling him, listen, you have brought my people this far, and you're not going to make it into the land. Yeah. And he dies right before they cross over the Jordan into Israel. And there's one part of that that just is, it's you're just, I think you read that and you're sad because Moses took the people right. for 40 years, led them, and then he doesn't get to go in to the land. But then we look at, I think we talked about it last week on the podcast, the transfiguration, and Moses is there at the transfiguration with Jesus. And so he does finally make it into the land, but it's not until he's there with Jesus, which is cool.
Well, it is interesting because you have this, the person God uses to rescue mm-hmm. his people, and yet it's essentially his sin.
Yeah.
And his failure to finish well, maybe.
Yep. Yep.
That keeps him out. And I think about, you know, the A to Bible Academy that we're running this fall mm-hmm. and just the idea of, okay, what does it look like to finish well? Mm-hmm. I think it's called Live It Well.
Yeah.
You know, like charting a God-centered course for your fourth quarter, and just how it seems like, especially maybe in American culture, that mm-hmm. like, that idea of checking out for your fourth quarter mm-hmm. or like, oh, my work's done here. You know, we're kind of a youth obsessed culture. Mm-hmm. And what would it look like to not make the mistake of Moses where you kind of turn your eye away from what God has for your life and just yeah. go your own way? Because that's really, it's the rock incident, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God tells him to talk to a rock and he's so frustrated. And the last time he hit it and it worked. So he did what worked the last time.
Yep.
And God's like, yeah, That's it.
Not what I told you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what I told
Trying
you.
Trying to do it on your own. Yeah. Which the symbolism or the symmetry there between Jesus spending 40 days in the desert and Moses spending 40 years in mm-hmm. the desert. And then Jesus, he doesn't do it on right. his own. He trusts God every single time. And Moses didn't. Moses tried to do it on his own. Moses took control back. Moses, yeah, fell into that temptation and just that imagery of like, yeah, we can't, but he can.
Well, and that's really where I want to kind of take us next is you have these Moses and Jesus parallels. We've talked about some of them before. Uh-huh. You just mentioned the wilderness mm-hmm. and it's notable, you know, Israel is there for 40 years. Jesus is there for 40 days. Mm-hmm. It's also very noticeable. And I think we're supposed to notice this, that Jesus responds, I believe, every time with quotes from Deuteronomy.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And so here you have Jesus, you know, in his wilderness testing, reflecting upon the text, yep. Like at the end of the wilderness.
Yeah. Yep.
And we talked, I think, last time about the birth, how both Moses and Jesus escape kind of a genocide, yeah, uh-huh. and they both have ties mm-hmm. To Egypt. And then we've mentioned this a little bit, but just the law parallels where Moses is considered the lawgiver. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus is like, you know, you have heard it said, but I say to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that he's the fulfillment of the law.
Yep.
And of course, you have the transfiguration mm-hmm. there as well. You mentioned the Passover and the Last yep. Supper.
Yep.
And just the way, those two things go together. And then I think Paul explicitly calls Jesus the Passover lamb.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In 1 Corinthians. And we talked about the I am statements mm-hmm. last time, I think, as well.
Yep.
And then there are some fun things about Jesus being the bread of life, and that compares really well to manna. Uh-huh. and then Jesus is the living water, you know, yeah. versus the water from a rock.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else there might be. Of course, you have the new covenant versus the covenant of the law. You have the, you have kind of the Red Sea crossing where God works miraculously with water there.
Yep.
And then you have Jesus just, he's like, I don't need to part the waters. I can just walk across it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it says the disciples are freaked out by that.
Yeah.
Because they know that's not normal. Uh-huh. Right. I think it's funny when like you see the humanity of some characters. Because you think about if someone you knew just started walking across the water, you would be terrified.
Yeah.
What in the world is going on there?
Which is crazy. And then Peter's like, I want to try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that would not be my response.
let me give it a run here.
Uh-huh.
And so there are tons of ways, again, that the Exodus is kind of the foundational story for the whole rest of the story of the Bible. And then Jesus builds upon that and kind of as the final Exodus for us from our sins.
Yeah.
So we had a question from a listener about your first sermon. So let me read it here. And here you have to say, said, I'm curious about the fourth point of the first Moses sermon. God is passionate about your purpose. I'm not sure that this is true. My understanding is that God is passionate about his name and the glory due his name. Hmm. Can you help me find biblical support that God is passionate about my purpose?
Okay. So the question I think is saying like, my kids are looking at colleges right now.
Right.
And they're trying to decide what college to go to. And so I think the question is probably saying, like, does God really care about the college that I choose? Like, is he really passionate that I choose this college over this college? And to that, I would say, no, probably not. But I think the point I was trying to make in the sermon was God is passionate about every follower of Jesus has been sent. And every follower of Jesus has been sent out into the world. And God is passionate about that reality, that you have been sent to go just share that truth and the reality with your neighbors and your coworkers. And that's a responsibility that all of us have. And God's passionate, about that.
Right. We often, when we say like, what does God have for me? Or what is God's will for me?
Yep.
Or what's his plan for me? We want to know about like a certain thing.
Yeah.
Like what college we're my daughter's a junior, so I think we saw you guys at the college fair.
Yeah.
As well. But it really is about whatever your career you're in.
Yeah.
Whatever college you go to, whoever your friends are you doing the Great Commission, going to all the world, make disciples, teaching them everything I've commanded you, baptizing in the name of the Father and Son, and the Spirit. And I'm with you wherever you go as well.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that God still doesn't care about those other little decisions. I think in a lot of ways, he still leads us. He's still interested. Sometimes some of them, he gives us 10 choices in front of us. And he's, I think, intrigued and saying, which one are you going to choose? Other times, like with the Israelites, there's a pillar of fire in front of us. And God is saying, follow me. You need to follow me. Other times there's a time where Elijah is camping out and it says that the stream that he's by has dried up. It's a dry riverbed now. And that's the indication for Elijah, it's time to move on. Mm. The stream bed is dry. There's no more water here. You got to move. And I think there are other times where God is just, God is leading us and God cares about the direction that we're going. But to be passionate about a purpose, I think, is the idea that wherever we go, we just recognize that we've been sent. And he cares about us and he cares about the people around us and has put us in that position so that we can be ambassadors.
Yeah, we never have to say like, oh, I wonder what God has for my life.
Mm-hmm.
We can be like, oh, what does God have for me? Like what job does he have for me right now? That's a question. Like, what does God have for my life?
Yeah.
Well, it's clear in the New Testament, it's to develop the character of Jesus and just spread the good news of Jesus with those around you.
Yep.
You know, that's what life is about.
Yep.
That's what we're called to do in this season. So, really good stuff. I think as we wind down, just one other thing I wanted to mention was you talked about, you kind of summarized the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And it starts with, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. I shall have no other gods.
Yeah.
But then one of the commandments is just that, like, hey, don't sleep with anybody other than your wife mm-hmm. or your husband. Mm-hmm. And I think those, the first one and that one are really connected. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about in our Made for More, understanding God's design for sexuality yeah. is how our sexuality is really tied to God as the rescuing and redeeming God mm-hmm. in the covenant. Mm-hmm. And so as we jump into that, you know, both of these things, the live it well, really tied to like finishing well and the Moses mm-hmm. story. And then the made for more is really tied to like, okay, what is God after with our sexuality? Mm-hmm. And I think those commandments, we didn't even get into this much, but those commandments are really just like headings for the way God wants us to live. Mm-hmm. You talked about that, mm-hmm. you know, headings, but there's just the implications of them continue. We see it through the rest of the law yep. and we see it through the way Jesus talks about them as well. And so we're excited to be able to offer those to Ada Bible Academies. I'm sure we'll have the links to those in the show notes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've had a chance to peek into the first session and it's awesome. Yeah, I think it's really great content.
So,
yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us for this a little bit different podcast.
Yeah.
Just Brad and I hanging out, talking about uh-huh. the sermon. Hopefully you've enjoyed it and found it helpful. And our just prayer for you is that as you think about how you want to live your life, that you would understand that it all is tied to the rescue and that everything we do flows out of a heart of gratitude mm-hmm. to our rescuing God. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Ada Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast. We pray this conversation was helpful and encourages you throughout the week as you seek God's help to grow in His Word. You can find all resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes, including a link to this week's sermon and the current sermon series. We hope you'll join us next time for the Beyond the Weekend podcast.